Hello, everybody. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. In these sex-negative times, somewhat heightened by last week's election with Donald Trump being the president-elect, being a sexologist leads to a certain amount of frustration, even sadness, anger. And I am so glad to have a really appropriate guest for this show. I read her newsletter. This is Veronica Monet I'm talking about. I've been getting her newsletter for some years, and her last newsletter was so eloquent about the election fallout. So I want to tell you a little bit about Veronica. She is an outspoken advocate for sexual self-determination, and she's been a guest on many major media, including CNN, Fox News, and The New York Times. Her coaching clients benefit from a potent combination of her training as a certified sexologist and anger specialist, as well as decades of personal recovery. Lots of personal work here. Codependency, anger issues, sexual abuse, and domestic violence. Welcome to this program, Veronica Monet. I'm so glad you could be on and talk to us about so many things that are really current and upfront right now.
Well, I'm really excited to be here and excited you wanted to take on some of these topics, too.
Yes. I do, of course. I want to make this show relevant, and I've been with Progressive Radio Network now. In February, it'll be 7 years. So,
wow! Congratulations.
Yeah, and you have a radio show too, a podcast.
I had a radio show on BBS Radio for about 5.5 years, and I also helped found something called the Sex Talk Radio Network, and it was basically for women. But I haven't been doing radio, I'd say, for the last couple of years. I got burnt out on it, but I'm sure glad people like you are doing it.
Good. And we want to tell the listeners that you have a very enlightening website called theshamefreezone.com. Theshamefreezone.com. And I will put that up for everybody to read.
Fabulous. They can find my podcast there, although it's not current, but I've got some really good ones on there about ecosexuality and also a rape survivor story. My YouTube's on there too. So
today we're
going to be talking a little bit about survivors. So I think
we are. We are. But let's start with a question. Why are you so passionate about sexual self-determination?
You know, I really think that sex is kind of our core identity. It's where everything else kind of comes out of the sexuality. So let me explain, because that probably sounds a little confusing. But in the womb, we've got quite a bit of research now that shows that in the womb, fetuses are masturbating to the point of orgasm.
Yes, so that really I'm aware of that research, yes.
Yeah, it suggests that the human organism is actually wired first and foremost to be sexual before we have our first breath of air, before we have our first sip of mother's milk, before we ever see the face of another human being. So having that connection with ourself, our own sexuality, it should be one of our most basic human rights. And I think that everything else flows out of that. If we have a healthy relationship with our own sexuality, we're going to be less violent. Now, where do I get that assertion? If you look at this animal called the bonobo, which looks like a chimpanzee and it's one of our closest relatives,
we've talked about bonobos.
Sex.
Mm-hmm. They do. Yeah, they make love, not war.
Yeah, exactly. And they're very closely related to us and also chimpanzees, which are just about as violent as human beings ever thought of being. Mm-hmm. So I believe that when we are separated from our sexuality through any number of things, such as genital mutilation or religious shaming and taboos, there's this way in which we become a more violent species. So, but, you know, without going full tilt into that topic, which I certainly could devote hours to, I also want to bring out the point that when we're more connected to our sexuality in a healthy way, in an empowered way, that we're often healthier and happier and more creative and productive. So the kind of people that we're wanting to be, the kind of people that we want to people this planet with, are more likely to be sexually enlightened. And I want to preface this. Every time one talks about anything that smacks of sex positivism, there's a lot of bells and whistles and alarms that can go off for anybody who's ever suffered any kind of sexual abuse. So I'm passionate about this topic because I'm a sexual abuse survivor, and I absolutely, positively think that when we don't have a healthy relationship with our sexuality, it leads to sexual violence. And I think that's a lot of what we see nowadays, and sometimes it even gets normalized. And that's really sad for me. So, that's why I'm so passionate.
Yes, and you have done years and years and years of personal work to overcome, because you had a difficult beginning, and your sexuality was not to be celebrated. You had some very negative experiences. Do you want to just talk about those briefly?
My father was sexually abusive to both my sister and I. Mm-hmm. He molested me and raped my sister when she was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I come from a long line of pedophiles. I've got them on both sides of the family. My mother was molested by her grandfather, and her mother was molested by her father. And then on my father's side of the family, the entire family was engaging in sexual abuse, but especially the older brother. My uncle Bob, he pretty much raped everybody in the family except for the parents. So
my goodness.
You know, it just goes from family to family to family. And oftentimes people who come out of sexually abusive homes will gravitate towards each other. So then they perpetuate that and, pass that on to their children. Now, fortunately, my sister and I both have gotten in recovery around incest, and it stops here. We're not passing this on to anybody.
Yes.
But it takes a lot of work to become aware when you're immersed in that. In my family of origin, religion was used to justify sexual abuse and to hide it.
Yes.
So it was denied. It was downplayed. It was minimized in a lot of ways. And then the authoritarian relationship between fathers and their children facilitated that sexual abuse.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So then when I went to college,
mm-hmm.
I went to college, I was just absolutely positively ready-made rape victim. I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know how to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
And really all somebody had to say to me is, don't worry, I won't hurt you. And I became oftentimes just unable to speak or move. I'd been trained and groomed so well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I ended up being date raped 3 times in my life. And I have so, so much empathy for anybody who's ever been sexually harassed, sexually abused, fondled, or raped. Oftentimes we think about rape as something that happens, the bad guy in the bushes jumps out and grabs you. And the vast majority of people who have been sexually abused have suffered from the hands of people that they know.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah, whether it's a relative or a teacher.
We need to just back up a little bit and for a definition, because any person who forces another to have unwanted sex is committing an assault. And
we have to fine-tune that word sex, because here's the thing, that originally rape was defined as penis-vagina penetration. Mm-hmm. And then we had a separate definition for sodomy, which was anal penetration by a penis or a foreign object, or oral copulation. And the laws were written very poorly. It was very much about women as property. But fortunately, our definitions of sex have changed, in a large part because we're much more aware of the vast diversity of sexual expression. You know, obviously, lesbians do not have penis-vagina sex. So that helped us to start enlarging our idea. What is a sexual assault? And I'm really happy that we've gotten to the place in society right now where we're starting to look at any unwelcome touch, especially of the genitals, even by one's hand, such as Trump grabbing pussy, is absolutely, positively sexual assault.
Yes, absolutely. And it has a lot of people worried. And as we continue this conversation, we'll get into some of the specifics and some of the fears around that. But I want to kind of set the foundation, the scene for it. And when we spoke off the air, you suggested that you have a very good question. How can we celebrate sexuality when so many of us have experienced negative sexuality, such as sexual harassment and abuse and rape? And I think we also need to talk about the partners, the lovers of women who've experienced these things, because most lovers of sexually assaulted women have deep feelings of outrage and shame and guilt, all of these things to work out. And I think in my experience over 30 years of being a sex therapist, they're hard to work these emotions out alone, to exercise them alone, that because men will often internalize them and wind up with stress-related health problems, ulcers, high blood pressure, their own sex problems. So I encourage people listening, if you have been assaulted yourself or your partner has been assaulted, get yourself some help dealing with your own reactions to the assault. And then they'll actually, the men or a partner of a woman who's been assaulted can even better support their lovers if they get some help themselves.
Of course, and I also want to highlight that sexual assault survivors come in every gender. Some sexual assault survivors are transgender, and mm-hmm. some are male.
Right.
And not all perpetrators are male. The vast majority of them are, but there's plenty of little boys who've been molested by an aunt or a babysitter or a mother. So mm-hmm. we really, really need to start becoming more aware of the fact that, one in four girls and one in five boys are sexually abused. And then when it comes to things like sexual harassment, we need to expand our definition so it includes what happens to men as well.
Yeah.
And, because we're not really showing up to be sensitive towards the sexual abuse of men, I think then we risk raising men who are less sensitive to the sexual abuse of women. It's kind of like what goes around comes around. So we mm-hmm. really need to start mm-hmm. paying a lot more attention to the ways in which boys are abused, both emotionally, physically, and sexually, if we really want to change this world so that it's a safer place for all of us. As far as how we can embrace our sexuality when we're recovering from sexual abuse, I share my own personal journey in that. I really did not want to give the perpetrator the power to own my sexuality. So a lot of it was defiance and this fire that I have that I will own my sexuality. Nobody else is going to do that. The other thing is that I really just early on was taught to make this distinction between sexual assault and sex. And I was taught that rape is not sex, it's violence. So I never thought of it as a form of sex. Yes, it involves the genitals, but no, it's not sex. Sex, by my definition, is something that consenting adults engage in.
Yeah.
And it's not something that adults foist upon children. And it's not something that adults with power use to intimidate and threaten and coerce other adults. So sex, in my definition, is something that's consensual adult behavior. And if it's consensual and it's adult behavior, then, you know, the sky's the limit. Whatever makes
Absolutely.
People happy. Yeah. But short of that, it's an act
yeah.
of aggression. It's an assault, and it's not sex. And I think that as a survivor for me, that's been crucial, absolutely crucial, because then I don't conflate the two. I don't start thinking, yeah, but sex hurts. It's like, no, sex doesn't hurt. Violence does.
Exactly.
And being able to separate those has just been such a gift for me. And, of course, that's just like step one. But
yes. I've had some clients who've experienced rape, and they'll say things like, I've lost interest, I've lost sexual interest, and it's very common. And I say, you cannot blame yourself. You didn't invite this problem any more than you invited the assault. So again, we're back to professional help from somebody like you, from somebody like me. Professional help is an important part of recovering your full sexuality after a rape. And there are some date rape situations where the woman is a virgin, and I think, oh, what an awful introduction to sexual relations. How very sad.
Well, there's also a fabulous book out there that I'd love for your listeners to know about, because it's Stacey Haynes. She's a somatic psychologist. She wrote a book called The Survivor's Guide to Sex.
Yeah.
And I worked my way through that book. It's a workbook. Every chapter is followed with exercises.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few, if not the only book that I am aware of, that actually is all about moving towards a full, joyous connection with your sexuality. Because so often I think that in recovery, you know, I went through years and years of support groups and therapy, which were absolutely essential. But at some point after years and years of that, there was no model for how to move into a joyful celebration of my sexuality.
And this book does have it.
Veronica,
would you mention her name again? Is it Stacey E-Y or I?
Stacey,
go ahead. Just say her name.
Mm-hmm. Stacey is S-T-A-C-I, and then Haynes, H-A-I-N-E-S. Stacey Haynes.
Got it. Survivor's Guide to Sex Work to Sex.
The Survivor's Guide to Sex.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome book.
I appreciate knowing about that.
Yeah. So I mean, the thing is that the trauma is in the tissues. The trauma is in the body. So talk therapy and in support groups are fabulous, but they only go so far. At some point, you actually start having to work with the body.
Yeah.
And there's also, my friend Joseph Kramer started something called the Sexological Body Workers. You can get certified as a sexological body worker throughout the United States and other countries now. It's an international certification process. And
yeah.
if you find a sexological body worker who can actually work with your genital tissues to release the trauma and help you get it out of your body, that when you're ready, not before, but when you're ready, that could be a really potent way to put yourself into a healing paradigm. And the other thing that you might do, if you don't want anybody touching your genitals, and I totally understand that, I wouldn't have been ready for that for years, and I wasn't. At some point, though, I did do a sexological body work session, and I found it really worthwhile. But the other thing that you can do is Rolfing or massage, deep tissue massage. Get a practitioner who is able to handle your crying. You want to be able to cry this stuff out. It has to kind of come out the way it went in. And
yeah.
The pain I have been amazed how many times I've gotten body work and found out that trauma from some event that took place 10 years ago is still stuck in my myofascial. It's still there. So we have to get it out of the body.
But to find reliable, certified body workers may take some work and some research, because you just don't want to go to anybody. Familiar with Kramer and his work. And are you saying he now has a nationally certified program where he's teaching other people to do the body work?
It's international, and it's been in existence for about 10 or 15 years now. The other thing that I teach my clients is how to do their own healing ritual, self-pleasuring ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask them to do a masturbation ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no pornography, no visual stimulus, no romantic scenarios. I want them to start off usually by disrobing in front of a mirror and maybe dancing seductively for themselves in front of that mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Playing music that is something expansive, something that makes them feel very spiritually ascendant.
Mm-hmm.
And then to arouse all the senses, so that you've got the incense or scented candles, and, you know, mood lighting, and possibly, you know, if you're into taste, you might have some chocolate or something. You really want it to be a sensual celebration of your connection to yourself. And then you have to learn how to touch your body in ways that might actually not be intuitive. Because most of us touch our bodies, the first time we're cognizant about touching our bodies, we're shame-based. And we're maybe frightened of getting caught by somebody. So there's all this shame and fear, and we're contracted. And we want to move into a place of expansion and celebration. So anyway, those are very
important points. And when I'm doing, especially in the first sessions, when I'm doing a psychosexual history, so often I will hear, especially from men, a mother walking in on masturbation, and then years later, the same man who has had other problems along the way, producing guilt and shame, then it's manifested with erectile dysfunction, even though he's still in his 20s.
Yeah.
So it can be manifested in all sorts of ways, but that early discovery of being caught, it's so important, I think, as a parent, and I did this when my children were young, to say if I saw them touching themselves, you know, I know that feels good, but that's something you do in the privacy of your room. You don't do it out in the living room watching TV. But just to normalize it is important, and to know, to say that it feels good, but it's also a private activity. And I'm sure my children appreciated that I never once shamed them. I knew better.
I'm sure they did too. You know, it's a really important thing. I think that we can't have sexual freedoms without sexual boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing that creates safety for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I know, God, I've been part of some sex positive communities where the boundaries didn't even seem to, it was like a dirty word or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody seemed to understand the particular needs, especially of a sexual abuse survivor, never, ever, ever to be touched unless they have given permission or requested the touch.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not sex positive in my book. In my book, you know, you're sex positive if you're also positive that you're going to find out what my boundaries are.
Good point. I like that, Veronica. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have to
be able to assert my boundaries mm-hmm. without going into this contracted place. You know, I think sometimes we don't have permission to say, I don't like this, I don't want that. And so then we kind of rely on this shame-based training around sexuality, like that's bad or that's wrong or that's sinful. And I can't ascribe to any of that thinking. So I just have to stand there with my boundary, which is no, I don't like that. I don't want that. And that's good enough. I don't need to have an explanation. I don't need to have, you know, a religion or a holy scripture or something to back up my assertion that I simply don't want it.
No means no.
Yeah, exactly.
And some men are confused because they've had some women say no when they thought, oh, well, maybe they may mean or mean they meant, let's get the tense right, yes, when they're saying no, and then they'll push the boundaries, and then you have date rape, and you have a very unhappy woman.
Well, you know, I've done a lot of power play in my own sexual life, mm-hmm. and it can be a lot of fun playing with those power dynamics, but there is not really a fine line between playing with power dynamics and date raping somebody. And so I just can't give the date raper a pass on that. I do believe there's a lot of beautiful men who worry that they might have coerced or somehow or another pressured their partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate their sensitivity to that. But usually, you know, it's kind of like the person who worries about sounding stupid probably isn't. You know, the people who are insensitive to those sort of things are the ones who we have a problem with. And here's my experience, usually, of the date rapist mentality is that it's a tremendous amount of ego and a need to control. So it's not a misunderstanding. It's a very selfish quest to gratify oneself at the expense of another person, and actually kind of get off on, if not absolutely get off on, the idea of imposing your will on another person.
Yes, and of course it's often alcohol fuel too.
Well, that's like another whole. You know, I've been clean and sober now for 31 years, so mm-hmm. It's terrible, actually, what can happen around that. I was date raped on a blackout. This was back when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I was 22. I was fresh out of college. I was very much an active alcoholic, and I drank myself into a blackout. And a coworker had no idea how to take me home. He didn't know where I lived, and we had been out drinking in a bar. So he put me in his van. He drove me to the motel that he was living in. Shows you what kind of a classy dude he was. And proceeded to date rape me. For me, when I came out of the blackout, I thought, wow, maybe this is my fault. I got drunk. And he proceeded to tell me that I resisted, fought, and said no repeatedly while he was raping me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was definitely a scary thing. This guy had spent most of his time in prison. The only way he knew how to have sex with a woman was to rape her.
And, very sad. Physiologically, it's very interesting to me that a woman may lubricate during rape, but she will almost never climax. You know, the body
That's just not true. There's plenty of women who've climaxed during a rape.
Maybe I read the wrong study, but that's what I read.
The body is capable of all kinds of things, and this is what gets really confusing and starts creating shame people, because the man got an erection or the woman lubricated or somebody ejaculated or had an orgasm does not in any way, shape, or form tell us whether or not that person was raped or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really damaging myth that we want to move past. If what you're feeling is guilt and remorse, then that's something to question. But, you know, if you feel fear, and this is, nobody else can make that decision for you, but if you feel fear, then you find yourself submitting because you're afraid, then that's rape.
Mm-hmm.
That's rape. And, your body might respond, but that doesn't mean that it's not rape.
That's right. And lots, I know that I hear clients defend even, well, some other destructive behaviors with, I'm scared. I'm scared. And, of course, I get it. But when we keep projecting a cruel universe, we become its victims. And so I would like to help people move past that fear, and maybe that is a good segue to the next question, which
yes.
is, what steps can sexual abuse survivors take to feel safe when we have a self-admitted sexual predator in the White House? What steps?
Well, the very first thing is to acknowledge your feelings. And that's, you know, if people are kind of normalizing it and sweeping it under the, you know, under the rug, so to speak, and saying that, it's not that big of a deal, or, you know, we're going to get our focus on other things. There's a way in which this is horribly invalidating to sexual abuse survivors, because almost all sexual abuse survivors and rape survivors feel a little bit untrusting of their own perceptions. And mm-hmm. There's all of this emotion churning inside, and yet you don't see any validation on, you know, out in the world that there's a problem. So you can start to think that you're crazy, and you start to try to talk yourself out of it. So the first thing that that I want to share with your listeners, any of those who have been even just sexually harassed, okay?
Yes.
Sexual harassment is a big deal. It creates a hostile work environment, and, you know, it can take years off your life and reduce your productivity and compromise your health. So take that stuff seriously. If you feel, you know, frightened and you feel revolted by mm-hmm. by the election results, validate your feelings, even if nobody else in your world will validate them. Validate your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really show up for yourself in a compassionate way. And you know, okay, yeah, I'm not sleeping. I'm having nightmares. This actually started before the election, by the way. I've talked to so many women who were not sleeping well, whose post-traumatic stress disorder and past trauma had been activated just around the debates.
Yes,
so,
and also with that horrid tape that came out from Access
yes.
Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
And so to really connect with, it doesn't matter what the media, how the media may try to downplay this. It doesn't matter how other people may try to minimize this. View it as a dysfunctional family. I grew up in a family where incest was normalized.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that groups of people can normalize just darn near anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to be strong in what you know to be true and
mm-hmm.
hold to that. And the other thing that I found that can be really helpful is to, you know, have your grief, have your sadness, feel the fear, but find a way to transmute that into action. Get
mm-hmm.
into some sort of action. And for myself, a lot of times that has gone in the direction, two directions. One, of being an activist and really trying to make a positive difference in the world. And the second, to helping other people. But you don't have to be an activist or a relationship coach like I am to be able to use both of those. You can take measures towards making the world the kind of place you want it to be just by even volunteering on a crisis hotline for RAIN. You know, there's organizations that are fighting rape and incest and sexual assault. You can volunteer on the phone bank and help other people.
Yes.
You could send money to an organization that you love that's helping survivors.
Yes.
And then, you know, as far as the measures that you're going to take in your own personal life, I actually recommend self-defense classes. Now,
I have done
so
that as well. I agree.
Have you?
It really is empowering.
Well, it is. I'll never forget. I took this model mugging class, and they call it all different kinds of names now, but it's basically the man who is going to be the rape perpetrator dresses up in this big padded suit, and you are taught how to hit full force.
Yeah.
And I, we did what we called reversals, which was we told them exactly how we were raped. And he came in as our rapist, said the exact same words, did the exact same maneuvers. And we were taught, basically, don't move, don't say anything, be very cooperative. And as soon as you see your opening, you go from 0 to 100 and you take him out.
Yeah.
And I remember I was doing this one particular reversal about a, it was the first time I was ever raped. I was a freshman in college. And it was in a dormitory. This guy that I had a crush on, I was attracted to him, and he raped me. Mm. And it was, you know, this has happened to so many people. So many people wound up in this situation. So when I had the attacker on me and I'm trying, during the self-defense class, I just froze. I thought, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I started to go retreat into myself and turn into this little puddle of a human being. And somewhere off in the distance, I could hear those 16 women that were in the class with me yelling my name. Telling me that I could do it. And their voices got louder and louder and louder. And then all of a sudden, the attacker was on the ground. And I was yelling 911, and I didn't even know how I did it.
So, well, I think not only was that empowering, but it also had to be very healing to go through the whole experience again. But this time, You weren't a victim. You fought back.
And I was supported by my sisters.
They
were right there with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were supporting me. That was huge.
Where did this class take? Because I don't know that a lot of communities have a class like this. Where did you take it?
Well, look, I took it in the Bay Area, and they used to call it Bay Area Model Mugging.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bay Area is in Northern California. But I would tell your listeners to look up on their search browser for anything that says model mugging or self-defense class for women where they're going to actually be wearing a full suit of armor so that you can do full – sometimes they'll call it like full contact.
Yes.
You don't want karate or anything like that. This was actually developed by a man who's – one of his graduates, she was a black belt in karate, got raped after she got her black belt in karate. He figured out that so much of self-defense that's out there does not help women at all, because women are often attacked from behind or they're pinned down by their date. And what this particular class teaches you how to do is use the most powerful part of your body as a woman, which is your legs. And to actually use those legs when you are down on the ground. Not standing face to face, because when's the last time any woman was standing face to face with her rapist? It just doesn't happen.
That's true.
Usually
that's
pinned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did going through that really help you with some of your post-traumatic stuff? Just replaying it, but coming out on top, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, PTSD is something that you have to be working to heal long term.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different modalities. Some people do EMDR and some do talk therapy. They're developing some really exciting treatments for PTSD that involve things like MDMA, but those are still in the trials, and the federal government just approved those, but they haven't actually been brought forward for the public yet. But in the meantime, I'll tell you one thing that's really, really helpful is yoga. Yoga is awesome. And there are yoga classes specifically for people who suffer from PTSD. A lot of times you can find those through a domestic violence shelter or hotline. You can contact your rape crisis center or your domestic violence shelter and ask them if they know of any free classes. A lot of times, I know we have them here locally here in Nevada City, free yoga classes for survivors.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful way to start breathing and moving into all of your tissues and start releasing that trauma so that you can live a full, you know, fully embodied, empowered, celebratory life.
I'm aware of a group of groups called Yoga Warriors or Warriors yeah, yoga warriors, I guess. I think that's it.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It's all military related, and it's really helped a lot of these men get centered and calm down. And looking at
men, women, and transgender, so, you know, we have all three in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 But if listeners go to your website, theshamefreezone.com, they'll see you sitting in a yoga pose, and it sure looks, your body looks like it's, I was thinking this, I didn't know this till now, but I bet you do a lot of yoga. Your body looks very fit and strong.
I lift weights and I do yoga. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's another thing, this isn't for everybody, but some kind of athleticism is a great way to start having a loving, healthy relationship with your body. And I love weightlifting because it kind of helps me get my aggression out. And then yoga helps me connect with my spirit and the uh-huh. divine. And yoga is like a prayer for me. It's just a beautiful
like
place
like a prayer.
To be.
Yes. And so you've been doing it a long time, Veronica.
Weightlifting for about 20 years. Yoga only less than 10.
Okay. So, less than 10.
Yeah. I'm one of those people who decide to take up yoga I'm looking at yoga as something I want to do for the rest of my life. And I think when sometimes people start doing yoga young, they maybe get tired of it, but I'm just getting started, so I'm still really excited about it.
That's wonderful. And it helps for another. I have some clients who are in their 60s and 70s, and they want to keep their sex life, they want to be agile in their sex life. And so I often suggest yoga because they can move better mm-hmm. that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we wanted to talk about too today was just how survivors can keep their hearts open, and I think all of us can keep our hearts open while we're staying emotionally safe.
Yeah, talk about that, because that was the next thing that I was coming to. How do you do that? I know you have some very good answers for it.
Well, it's boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. It's real important.
Yeah.
But I actually teach something called the Exquisite Partnership Formula. It's something that I developed, and I'm really excited about it. As a relationship coach, that's what I share with my clients. And I work with a lot of couples doesn't matter, lesbian, gay, heterosexual.
Yeah.
I just work with Perrys. And some of my couples are actually polyamorous, so there's more than two people involved. But I find that the dyad still tends to be kind of a basic unit of communication between humans. So I like working that dynamic regardless of, you know, sometimes the entire family is involved, but I still like to work two people at a time. And the basic premise of this is, there's several, but I would say two biggest obstacles to connection and keeping our hearts open is, one, we got afraid that we're going to have to compromise or give up something that's really important to us. And then the other is that we just don't really feel seen or heard. We don't feel like the other person gets us. And so we kind of get frantic and mm-hmm. feel isolated or alone
mm-hmm.
in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I teach this 5-step process where people learn how to, first of all, appreciate. So I sometimes just kind of work from a conflict. Let's say somebody that you love says something you utterly disagree with. Maybe they want to go do a particular thing with you that you don't want to do, or they want to raise the kids in a certain way that you don't want to raise the kids. Whatever the case is, there's going to be a disagreement here. We are not on the same page. We don't want the same thing. And the first thing that I teach people to do is appreciate. Just, you know, I want to appreciate the fact that they're trying to include me in this. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. Thank you for pulling me into this.
The inclusiveness.
It helps to use a real specific example. So let's just talk about a mm-hmm. sex act that maybe you find repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
the first thing would just be to, like, say, hey, I can understand why you might be interested in that sex act. I hear a lot of people are. I understand it's kind of popular, or I've heard of it before. I understand some people like it, whatever the case is. So you're validating them. You're not making them feel weird or strange or bad. And then the next thing is to appreciate, well, thank you so much for wanting to have sex with me. I'm flattered. I'm happy about that. I want to have sex with you, too, if that's the case. If it's not, then it would be a different scenario. But we can still use this model. You know, if it was somebody that you didn't want to have sex with, it would be like, thank you for wanting to connect with me and get so close with me. I appreciate that. I'm enjoying our connection, too. I don't want to take it to the sexual level, but thank you for that. And then the next thing is to do the assertion. So basically, you're validating, appreciating, and then you're asserting. And the assertion is, no, it's a very simple no.
Mm-hmm.
The more time you spend explaining your no, the bigger the hole you dig for both of you, because you start explaining, the other person maybe wants to talk you out of it. It just needs to be a firm no, not interested, not for me.
Yes.
I like the steps there, because you're starting with appreciation. Validating and appreciating, and so then the other person isn't necessarily going to put up those defensive walls immediately, because you're coming in slowly and with some positives before you assert no.
And it keeps your heart open. Our first response is to kind of contract and become afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So if I remind myself what I like about this person, what I want about this connection with this person, it helps me stay focused on what I want, so I don't get derailed and start running away from the thing that I don't want.
Yes.
And then my assertion is it's very simple, it's powerful, and it doesn't have any wiggle room. But I don't stand there, because now I've left this person not knowing how to connect with me. I immediately follow up with what I call a redirect. And the redirect is, it could be something like, I don't want to have that type of sex with you. I will never be available for that type of sex with you or anybody else. However, I would love to do this kind of sex with you.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be, I don't actually want to have sex with you ever. However, I love talking with you, and I would love for us to find an opportunity to do more of that. So see, I don't just like sit there with the no. I go into what we can do together.
Yes.
Now, chances are, if this person is pretty invested in the thing that they were suggesting, they may not intuitively and immediately like your suggestion either. As a matter of fact, they might retaliate and reject your suggestion just for the sake of retaliating. So that's the fifth step, then, is an invitation to partner around finding another option that both of you will like. It's like, okay, I hear you don't like my suggestion either. How about we sit down, we spend 20 minutes discussing what it is that would work for us?
I like it.
So,
It's very, very positive. And so do you, in the last 10 minutes or so of the program, and we stop usually about 3 minutes before the top of the hour, do you have a message of hope for those who may feel their sexual freedoms are at risk?
Well, the message, you know, there's a lot of layers to that.
Yeah.
First of all, I always say I have, any given day since the election, I have felt mixtures of hopelessness and hope. And,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that I keep coming back to is that I want to be resolved, not resigned. I don't
mm-hmm.
want to become resigned and contracted. I want to be resolved to continue to do what I've always done, which is to work the best of my ability to make this a world that's more sex positive and less shame.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of us gets to answer that question for ourselves about what that looks like, creating the world that we want to live in. But I do think that one of the hopeful messages that we can walk away from with from this election is that it's no longer okay to be on the sidelines. We cannot
afford to be an active person, an activist.
Yes. We can't be an observer of our fate anymore. There's too much at risk, and there's so many people that are counting on us to show up and to make a difference. And you get to choose what that is. Nobody else can make that choice for you. But to know that you actually are taking some sort of action, whatever it might be, maybe your action will just amount to rescuing puppies or planting trees. But whatever it is, to really get involved. And I think the other thing, too, that's taking shape at this point is that we have in the past had a lot of movements that were kind of separate from each other. So we'd have movements for sexual abuse survivors, movements for gay, lesbian, and bisexual and transgender rights, which, by the way, we worked long and hard to get all of those brought together because they were also separate from each other for a long time. And there were sex worker rights and sexual freedom rights and obviously reproductive rights and women's right to choose and Black Lives Matter. And all of this stuff really, I think, has to do with human dignity and our acceptance of diversity. So it comes
nicely
back
put, and you have worked hard on all of this, and you really have a very authentic voice now.
Well, thank you.
It's a powerful voice, and I'm glad that you can say it on this program because.
No, so am I.
Yeah,
thank
because
you.
By the time it's archived, there'll be thousands and thousands listening to it, and in other parts of the world too, since it's internet radio.
Yes,
so that's a good thing, you know.
The world is very small, and this election did not just impact the United States.
No.
And so I am working to keep my heart connected with everyone and to really want to stand up for those of my friends who are from Muslim countries and who are Muslim and my friends who are of different ethnic and racial backgrounds, so that we just do not allow ourselves to be separated out. Divide and conquer is a tactic of the oppressor. So we need each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need each other more than ever now.
I think we do. And in addition, in our culture, sexual pleasure is often still a dangerous commodity with dangerous overtones, and it's often the first thing we toss overboard during life's various storms, and we forget that it's as much a part of us as the need to eat and to breathe. Kind of, bringing us full circle back to how we began this show.
I think it is absolutely imperative that we continue to connect with our sexual expression and our sexual pleasure. That's where I find the roots of my passion and my purpose. And I approach, just as I approach yoga as a prayer, I approach sex as a prayer. And I think that it's so important for us not to buy into the idea that our sex is separate from our spiritual connection to ourselves and to each other, because it's not.
No.
It's really, yeah.
And it can be so spiritual, and it can be so amazingly healing when you're in a healthy relationship. And, I think for some women, walking out of a toxic relationship is really an important move, because not only are you being damaged now, but also your future self could suffer as much as your present self is if you take the stand and walk out of a toxic relationship.
For people of all genders, it's really important
yes.
to not allow themselves to be abused.
Mm-hmm.
And And I'm really, you know, here's another thing you asked for, a message of hope. While we're choosing not to be divided, but to join together and support each other, we've got to keep in mind that, the only way we're really going to heal this planet is if we heal that divide between the masculine and the feminine. And there are a lot of angry white men who helped to bring Trump into office.
That's right.
And I've been all over the internet looking at the various different movements and ideologies behind that, and it's very painful for me. It's very destructive what I see going on. And I can't help but think about when my nephew was first born, and he's a beautiful soul today. But when I was holding him as a baby, I just thought, these little boys are so innocent and full of love and so open and vulnerable. And what is it that we're doing to our boys so that they become so angry and violent? If we don't start looking at that more seriously, we're not going to be able to turn things around. And I'm really devoting a lot of my time and energy and passion to that, because I think that there's an untapped answer there for us.
That we raise our boys so that they are enlightened. I think we need to also talk to our boys about, maybe they're a little bit older, but talk to them about things like rape. Get it out and talk about it.
Well, oftentimes too many of the approaches are really about teaching boys to be gentlemen or respectful of women. And mm-hmm. How can you teach somebody to be respectful of other people when you're not being respectful of them?
Well, that's
so
very true.
I want us to start respecting our boys in ways that we just don't do right now. We're very cruel to them.
I feel like I did a very good job raising my son, who is now 36, but in terms of, I think that the earlier a boy learns that sex must never be used as a weapon and that everyone has a right to control his or her own body, the easier it will be to reduce the incidence of rape. Let us start early.
I really think that message is communicated. The message that I don't see getting communicated is that boys' feelings matter.
Mm.
So again, if their feelings don't matter, how can they extend any kind of respect to other people's feelings?
Yeah,
that's really
Veronica,
missing from.
It has been just wonderful having you on this program, and we've decided to do a part two next.
I can't wait.
Yeah, good. And if you're okay with it, I'd like to expand more on everything we've talked about today, but also talk about something that you did. I think you stopped doing it. It was being a sexual surrogate, what, about 10?
I've never been a sexual surrogate.
Oh.
I was a high-end escort.
Okay, well, there's our music, so we have to stop. On that provocative note, thank you. Thank you so much, Veronica. We'll talk more next week.
Bye
everybody.
Bye bye.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Ma i tuoi piedi